Welcome back. Our guest this week is trial lawyer Steve Sinas, working on the no-fault car insurance plan, and that's our lead story. The governor and the two Republican leaders pledged to talk more to find a solution. On the OTR panel, Jonathan Osteen, Emily Lawler, and Bill Ballinger. Sit in with us as we get the inside out, off the record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Welcome back to Off the Record. Wow, what a week. We got some movement on no-fault. Let's see where the movement's headed. Republican speaker here could have confronted the governor and jammed a no-fault car insurance plan through the House, sending it to her for a certain veto. It would have been ugly. But instead, there are now meaningful negotiations reportedly going on. So rather than jamming the governor, the Republican leaders will continue to talk with her.
Because of those ongoing conversations and productive conversations we're having, we've decided not to move on a bill today in good faith in an attempt to reach a consensus to drive down car insurance rates.
The Republican leaders report for the first time that the governor has put some concrete offers on the table, including a possible choice on the level of catastrophic care that you may want, at a level of perhaps $250,000.
The governor is finally with her team presented some things to us that actually move in a direction that we can have some optimism, that we can get to a bill signing in the not too distant future.
Now, the fact that they continue to talk may not seem like much to weary motorists who demand rate relief, but this is huge. For the first time in over 30 years, a governor and Republican leaders are actually inching toward a deal, with an air of confidence to boot.
Have you agreed on anything together?
We've agreed to continue working together.
Yeah, but that doesn't get the job done, does it?
Tim, I just told you, the job is going to get done one way or the other.
By the end of the day and by the end of this conversation, we're going to find a consensus on how we can deliver real rate relief.
The elusive rate relief for motorists, now in the hands of this trio. All right, Emily, how important is this?
I'd say very important. I mean, you look at the relationship between Chatfield and Shirky on this issue, the relationship with the governor right now. The fact that this wasn't rammed through this week tells us that it is serious and that it could move forward. And we might be closer than we've ever been on car insurance reforms.
They had a chance to jam her and send her a bill, which she said she would veto, and they chose not to do it.
Sure, and that probably would have been perhaps wise for them politically, score some political points. But if they really wanted to get reform done, that probably would have derailed the process. So not only has the governor indicated she's open to personal injury protection choice of some kind for the first time publicly, but also she said she thinks that she sees movement on the Republican side for things like prohibiting insurers from using non-driving factors and she's seen movement on two issues. Tighter guarantee and rate reduction. She said she sees a pathway forward on those issues, so she was willing to give a little bit on this issue, and we've got ourselves a real negotiation.
The subtext of this story is that it appears they have set the politics of this aside. They could have embarrassed her. They could have put her in a box. They could have made her veto a bill that they could have used against her, and they chose not to do that, Billy.
Well, the politics are still there, but I think give the governor credit. She finally got the message that this would be a bad idea to veto anything that the legislature sends her. I think she realized I've got to give a little bit here. She has given a little bit. I think her concession was major because what Jonathan just mentioned, they've already kind of tried to put in the bill. They gave her insurance bureau the power
to set the rates,
that kind of thing. So, I mean, I think that's significant. And I think Chatfield and Shirky realized, look, the governor is giving us an opening here. And we're not, to get to your point, going to just do pure power politics and say, no, governor, you're taking our version and we're shoving it down your throat. You can go ahead. We dare you to veto it. No, they want to get it done. And I think everybody wants to get it done for the first time, maybe even Gretchen Whitmer.
I think the three of them should take a bow, okay? And this not a curtain call.
Let's not be premature.
No, take a bow for making a commitment to try to do quote, the right thing. Oh, now, you may not like the special interests may not like what they're going to do, but the fact that they're willing to work on something is the way the process is supposed
exactly
to work.
Right.
And
exactly right.
And the fact that all of them are willing to divorce themselves a little bit from the special interests that have been running this debate in this town for the last decade plus.
They were geeked yesterday, these two Republican leaders, weren't they?
Leaders were, yeah. I mean, because they've been
in a positive way, okay?
Sure. I mean, they've been planning to, you know, try and run something regardless. So the fact that they got an opening here gives them an opportunity to run something that might actually become law at some point. So, yeah, of course they're optimistic.
What about Mr. Shirky and the wine analogy?
I
don't know where that came from.
Before the show, he said,
Orson Welles.
Is that what he was doing?
He said, a fine wine takes time. My friend, referring to you, Tim, he was, of course, he was asked when this might be fully baked. And, you know, he said it's not quite there yet. The legislature, of course, did act very fast once they had their own plans. It's now been a full week since they ran their own plans, and it's going to take a little bit longer now that they've got some real negotiations going on throughout this weekend.
I will say this relationship between the two leaders at this point kind of makes you wonder what could have been accomplished if Leonard and Meekhoff had gotten along better last
session.
Well,
that is a huge story. They are demonstrating that they are working very well together. There's no question about that. The problem that the governor has by signing off, let's assume they make a deal. She signs off on no fault. What is she going to get from them in return now on roads? Okay, they say there's no linkage. Is she going to look these guys in the eye and say, look, gentlemen, if I put my pen to paper on your thing, I need a commitment from you, not in writing, but I'm going to look you in the eye that you will help me on roads. Is that what she has to do?
She doesn't have to do it. She might try to do it.
Why wouldn't she do it?
In my estimation, she can try, but I don't think she's going to get anywhere with Shirky and Chatfield on that. I do not. I think this is freestanding right now, and I think the two sides are inching closer together to get a deal done. But the idea that there's a linkage to fix the damn roads, I don't think so.
I disagree, because this was, you know, kind of the top priority for the legislature and has been for a little bit, I think. And, you know, Whitmer's talking about her top priority. I think if they can get one top priority put to bed and solved in a politically amicable fashion, that even if it's not a direct horse trade, even if it's not a, you know, I help you, you help me, I think that lays the groundwork for working together on huge issues, and roads is a huge issue.
They don't have to call it linkage. They don't have to say it's a quid pro quo. They just look one another in the eye and say, look, I need your help, guys.
We're getting carried away here, Tim.
In the euphoria of the moment. You really think so? All right, so bring us back to earth.
Yeah, I think this is a freestanding issue by itself. It's tough enough after 40 years. The idea that there's a linkage to other major things out there that everybody would like to see get done, I don't think so. That's not the way these guys think in the legislature.
The governor obviously would like that, but at the same time, I think she realizes that the no-fault debate is taking up all of the oxygen in the legislature right now.
Right.
So if simply to get something done so that the conversation can return to a focus on roads might be a small victory.
Did her veto threat work?
You know, it's really interesting. She's been very upfront on a number of issues that she's...
It's refreshing. There's no dancing with the former governor. You know, I don't want to tell you what I'm going to do until it gets my desk,
blah, blah, blah. It's not on my agenda, or I don't do hypotheticals. That's what the governor
Lest we forget, right?
He didn't support the former governor, Rick Snyder. She's been upfront, and, you know, that certainly, it's a different approach, but it's one that lays the cards out on the table right away and gives people perhaps an opportunity to start working with that as an understanding. So, I think in this case it's been okay.
Lost in all of this was the grand plan from the House Democrats to cut rates by 40%. The story got zero linkage or any traction.
Because of what the governor, the leader of their party, is doing. I mean, if she comes
and they were out of sync.
Yeah,
the House
Dems
were saying one thing and she was in another place saying another.
Right, exactly. I mean, in a sense, she kind of threw them under the bus. if Shirky and Chatfield like what the governor is offering them, the House and Senate Democrats are, just
the
irrelevant.
Speaker described
irrelevant.
It as fairy dust.
It was probably never going to be taken seriously anyways, let's be honest. House Democrats proposed a plan, or well, actually a bipartisan plan last year that didn't gain any traction either because leadership didn't support it. So this wasn't ever going anywhere. And it's quite a radical departure from what was on the table from Republicans. So it was a gesture, but got lost. It was a media gesture, I think, and it got lost in the media.
I think that's true that it's a media gesture, and I think that there's some value for Democrats in wanting to look like they're not just obstructionists.
We're still here.
They have their own plan.
We're still here. Yeah. All right. If we put together a list in the legislature, Billy, of 10 people that might be suspect of looking for a bribe, would Larry Inman's name be on that list?
Well, I would say he would not be on the list, even though he's an odd duck. He's not an odd duck for the reasons that pertain to the incident that occurred this week. So it's really kind of baffling. And he cited his own background as a bank officer, chairman of the Board of Commissioners in Grand Traverse County for years. He said, are you kidding me? I would take a bribe, you know. So, I mean, there is a little disconnect there.
He was alleged by the feds for selling his vote on a plan that the union was interested in. And the speaker's reaction has been?
Speaker Lee Chatfield, pretty quickly, the same day that the indictment was made public, came out and called for Larry Inman to resign. He said, for the good of the institution. Representative Inman has been pretty adamant that he will not resign, at least in these first 2 days. He did a string of media interviews. He's not hiding. He's proclaiming total innocence here, despite some text messages that seem to be, anyways, questionable. And Speaker Chatfield, again yesterday, said, well, I'm going to give him a couple days because I think he should reconsider. And then another representative, O'Reilly, came out yesterday, a Republican colleague calling for him to resign. So I think they're going to try and ramp up pressure on Larry Inman to step down before Tuesday's session returns because they don't want to have to deal with questions about possible expulsion. Speaker Chatfield was very dodgy yesterday. I asked him a couple times, other reporters did, about expulsion. He kept saying he should resign. He should resign.
Well, I think they remember Gamrat and Corser and what happened in the last session, and they don't want to go through that again. But look, I would just caution everybody on a rush to judgment here.
Of course.
The last two incidents involving bribery and extortion in the legislature ended badly for the accusers. Ed Geese, Charlie Youngblood, you remember them?
74.
Yeah, and Youngblood, the charges were thrown out after he was pressured into resigning.
Two words here, due process.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Yeah, the calls for resignation from Speaker Chatfield, from Representative O'Reilly, have both been, to the effect of this is going to cause a huge distraction. It's going to be hard for you, even if you're innocent, to adequately represent the people of your district. That's their argument for asking.
You could ask the guy to stay home. Okay, if you're concerned, but you certainly, the Speaker has a right to say whatever he wants to say. But
a representative on the Democratic side stayed home for most of last year and got paid without being asked to.
And if you looked at the text messages, there were weaving stories in and out of that there may be other people involved. Is that a fair reading of what you saw?
Well,
I think that's a fair reading of the text messages. I'm not sure that's a fair reading of reality. But I do think that, it's a question that the House leadership has to confront is potentially, were there other people involved in this? And so far, they have not confronted that. So far, they've kind of demurred on the possible involvement of other people. And I will say that in talking to a lot of colleagues and even some of the people who voted no against that bill, that they do think Inman acted alone in this, if he did, as he's accused of.
All right, let's explore a no fault with one of the trial lawyers involved. Before you bring him in. There's a funeral today for Bob Berg, who used to sit around this table. Tomorrow, a memorial service for George Weeks, who used to sit around this table. Two great guys, almost two peas in a pod. Their personalities, very low-keyed, very measured, but very good.
Yeah, and they succeeded one another. I mean, Berg succeeded George Weeks as press secretary for Governor Milliken when Weeks became chief of staff. They were both legendary in their way. Berg went on to be press secretary to Coleman Young.
Of all people.
And so they were an incredible story, and to have their two services back to back, one day apart, is really incredible.
They were good guys. They were good guys. All right, now let's call in Steve Simons. Counselor?
Trial attorney Steve Sinas is deeply involved in the no-fault car insurance issue as associate counsel for CPAN, one of the groups working on the issue. He serves on the executive committee of the State Trial Lawyers Association and is an adjunct professor at the MSU School of Law. He holds his law degree from Wayne State and an undergrad degree from the U of M. Counselor, welcome to the program. You've had a busy week, eh?
I have.
You having fun?
Yeah, it's fun. It's exciting. Fun. We'll see where it goes, though.
Yeah, okay. Jonathan, go for it.
So, Steve, we were talking before you came on that the governor this week, in fact, on Thursday, just signaled that she'd be open to some level of personal injury protection choice. Right now, Michigan has uncapped medical coverage through auto insurance. The governor said she's open perhaps to something like a $250,000 option. What do you make of that development?
Well, first of all, what no-fault covers right now is the reasonable needs for people who are injured in a crash, right? So that's what makes Michigan no-fault so unique. It's what makes it so meaningful to the people of Michigan who are injured in crashes. So when you're talking about a capped level of no-fault, by definition, you're talking about people's reasonable needs not being met and that the coverage cutting off just because you've reached a certain dollar limit. We certainly hope that Governor Whitmer is not negotiating around those grounds, because that would effectively break Michigan's no-fault system and what it really does do for the people of Michigan who are seriously injured in a motor vehicle crash.
Let me ask you this question.
Is it possible, though, to reduce rates without reducing benefits?
See, this is where the common ground is and has been lost over the last week. So there are a lot of issues where all sides agree there are problems in no-fault and that we could work together to eradicate and to help save on the cost of insurance for everybody.
A fee schedule.
And we presented on that to the House Select Insurance Committee, and it seemed like they understood the overall point is that by a fee schedule where you set what the price is, if it's a reasonable fee schedule, you have a set price, that is cost containment, and that also takes care of the litigation problem that's in no-fault, or a big deal of it, because we argue too much about price in no-fault. Our courts are inundated with cases where you're just arguing about the price. And so it's a false narrative to say that the only route is to cut benefits. And that's the problem. That's the problem right now in the debate, is that they have moved the goalpost down to just cutting benefits as being the only option. There are many other ways we can try to make a difference for Michigan consumers.
They are proposing a fee schedule as well, though, as part of this proposal. I mean, aren't they just saying, well, that might produce some savings, we want more?
Well, they're two separate issues. Whether providers should be paid on a fee schedule is a separate issue. Whether consumers should be capped on their coverage. So there is common ground in the fee schedule. The one they propose, providers would tell you, the workers' comp fee schedule is not good enough to service the catastrophically injured under Michigan no fault. And so they don't accept the workers' comp fee schedule, but that's not to suggest that they wouldn't suggest a fee schedule.
Counselor, you said we hope she is not negotiating. She is negotiating.
Well, we hope that she's not negotiating in such a way where cap no fault is a foregone conclusion.
Well, either she is or she doesn't, and it looks like she is.
Well, that's where the House Democrats really show the path. I know that some of you said that their bill was just, you know, to protect them in the media. I don't see it that way. I see their bill as reminding everybody that there are other aspects of this debate that we should be considering.
Let me just be clear. So the governor should not be negotiating choice, period.
We do not believe so. There are other ways that she can negotiate. There are meaningful ways to make a difference for consumers without taking away their benefits. And here's the problem. If you negotiate around PIP choice, the discussion for anybody who's paralyzed, severely brain injured in a motor vehicle crash going forward is not that you have your reasonable needs covered. It's that, okay, well, you're going to have your needs covered up to $500,000, and because of what the politicians did in 2019, you have no more coverage. That's the discussion that I would have with people as a lawyer meeting them after a severe injury. Right now, I can say, don't worry about it. Michigan covers your reasonable needs. The cap policies is, don't worry about it up to that dollar amount. Then after that, you're on your own.
Our no-fault system began in the 1970s when I think your father was just getting out of law school.
Yes.
Apparently he bought into it, and I think your whole firm kind of likes the law the way it's evolved over the last 40 years. I'm not sure the citizens feel that way. But let me ask you this. If Michigan's system is so great, how come the other 49 states have never adopted it?
Well, the other 49 states have their own problems with auto crashes.
Not in terms of how much people pay for their auto insurance. They don't.
That statement's injected in the debate as if we all know what the deal is in all 49 states. Okay, I can tell you this. I know of no state that has stepped up and said, we've solved the crisis of medical care that arises from auto accidents. And let's make that point really clear here. Auto accidents cause more medical care than really any other single factor in our society. And so no state is stepping up and saying, we've solved that problem. Do states have problems with their insurance rates? I know that many of them do. I've talked to insurance experts across this nation saying they go around and they try to make a difference for consumers. And here's the real point that's relevant to the debate. For the last 30 years, up until now, no political leaders, especially on the Republican side, have ever championed the cause of doing something about rates other than by cutting benefits. There are a lot of different ways you can make a difference for rates, and those have not been explored. And so what we have here is this debate where we're saying, hey, we got to do it for consumers. You know, they're coming for us. They want us to save on their rates. Well, they do, but they don't want you to take away their benefits. Do other things.
But has this situation evolved over time, or has this always been a problem? Back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, people weren't paying attention, or what? Because all of a sudden, it's terrible now. It's reached a boiling point. Why?
It has. Here's a quick historical overview. The last 15 years, there have been many more problems. And that's due to a lot of Supreme Court cases. It's due to bad actors in the system. All those are the areas where CPAN and the groups affiliated with CPAN want to negotiate. They said, let's take out those problems. Now, along the way, what we've learned historically is that the Department of Insurance has done very little, if anything at all, to make sure that consumers are being fairly charged their premiums. And there's a whole lot of history there of them taking no action. And there's no history of the legislature ever stepping up and saying, let's make sure that consumers are being charged fairly. Let's make sure there's not discriminatory practices in rating. None of that has happened for 30 years. And now it's, hey, we got to do something about it. We got to do it at 2 a.m. on a Wednesday, and we got to do it by cutting benefits.
Have you guys sent a memo to the governor saying to back off?
We've sent a memo identifying the problems of the bill. And
when did that memo go out?
It wasn't a memo to her. It was a summary that we created, and we've released it on social media and everything else. And it was to say, hey, you're saying that you don't want a solution that creates more problems than it solves. Here are the 20 major problems.
All right,
of
but
the
since
bill.
Yesterday, has there been any communication with her office?
Not that I know of.
And when will that happen?
Well, I think that obviously people are realizing that her statements. I have the concern that PIP choice is the basis of the negotiations. And so one way or the other, we just want to make sure that the governor sees that the path is by being a leader with the House Democrats, by sticking up for consumers, by making sure you're not taking away benefits and exploring the other areas where there's common ground.
So walk us through, if you're representing an injured motorist and they had hypothetically a $250,000 medical portion of their auto insurance, what would happen when they reached that cap? And what would you, as their attorney, then do?
Okay, so let me just make this point, that when you're talking about the levels of $250,000, $500,000, if those are the levels they're talking about, to the public and just people looking at it, they might say, hey, that's a lot of money. But really what that money covers for the seriously injured is the hospital bill, right? The frontline medical providers, and they should be paid too. But people have to understand, that means that the consumers won't be able to benefit after that. They won't have enough money to cover their work loss if they can't work, their ongoing post-acute care. And so what happens is that person becomes lost in the sea of American healthcare. And this is something that I think is really being lost on everybody in the debate. This is ultimately about healthcare in America. And we know that the healthcare system in America is broken. We know that out in Washington, it shifts with the political winds, and that people don't really know where the healthcare system's going. So no fault is a way to cover the needs without having people be affected by all the other imperfections in the American healthcare system.
So you're saying right now that the bills that the legislature is considering they want to send maybe to the governor, it's a cure that's worse than the disease.
Yes, the current bills, absolutely. Any bills that's even in the realm of what they're talking about with these PIP choice plans and the ways in which consumers don't really have protections against the bad actions of insurance companies. And I will say, let me first emphasize, there are instances of people claiming, you know, excessive claims under no fault. There's those bad actors on the claimant side. That happens. But on the insurance side, there's a whole lot of it, too. And I don't see any of these bills addressing the bad behavior of insurance companies.
Have the trial lawyers been stepping up over the last 15 years when these problems have exacerbated and said, we got to have reform?
Yes.
I think it's been crickets from the trial lawyers. They haven't said a thing. The only reason they're reacting now is because they don't like the supposed cure that the legislature is coming up with?
Well, you know what? This is an issue that concerns me because people have to understand what CPAN represents. It's not one group. It's a collection of like 20 groups and consumers.
Give a flavor for who they are.
Well, it includes the Michigan State Medical Society, the Michigan Osteopathic Association, the Michigan Association for Justice, which is the Trial Lawyer Association. And it goes on and on with medical providers, consumer groups, individuals.
So it's everybody but the insurance folks.
Yes, everybody except for the hospitals and the insurance folks. Right? It's effectively the consumer group that's looking after the interest of the care that's available to people under the system. And to respond to your point about the Michigan Association for Justice, they should be commended because they could take a route here where they say, you know what, let's shift everything to tort and let's make our personal injury lawyers a bunch of money and it might screw people on their medical care, but who cares? Let's do it that way. They haven't. Historically, they've always said, you know what, we're not going to look at it that way. We're going to look after the care of our clients. And that's what they continue to do.
Making out better now than they were under the old tort system before the 1970s.
Well, I don't know that to be true. And I know that Michigan Association for Justice officially supports the idea that you're going to eradicate all the lawsuit problems you see on no-fault, where people arguing over price, people are charging too much. Nobody who is a legitimate trial lawyer and wants the profession to be well-represented wants that stuff, and Michigan Association for Justice does not.
Counselor, can you hang on for overtime?
Yes.
Okay, go to WKER.org for more of our conversation right after you see who's put this program on the air.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.